You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 7th of September 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. I will just begin by saying that I am wanting to hear from Radio Albion listeners, as an accusation has been made against me that what I say is likely to stir up hate. So I would like to hear from you, the listeners, how Radio Albion makes you feel, why you listen, and especially if you have been inspired to take any action. Especially good is if you have been listening since the Radio Aryan days and can comment on any changes that you may have noticed over the years. And if you could do this for me and send your reply to stormersubs@hushmail.com, or you can add it to the Discus comments or the chat room or on Gab, or on Telegram, or on any of the ways that you have to contact me, I would be very grateful. Well, today I want to look at the rescue attempt, or the so-called rescue attempt of Afghans, and importing them into Europe, America, and Britain in particular. Why is it we are importing these people? We were told that we were going over there to liberate them. We trained them. Apparently, there was an army of 300,000 Afghans that were going to protect the Afghan puppet government from the Taliban. And when the Taliban walked in, the Afghan army that we had trained didn't defend Kabul and the other parts of the country against the Taliban. They just handed their weapons over to them. And what was the response to that from the West? It was to say, well, we'll just import you all into our countries anyway. So why are we doing this if they deliberately refused to fight back against the Taliban? Why are we taking them into our countries? It's up to them to defend their country against the Taliban. Surely that means that they must have wanted the Taliban to come in. I would suggest that they may very well have had an inkling that if they didn't defend themselves against the Taliban, they would then have an excuse to be able to come into Europe as refugees. And we know the standard of living in Europe is, and in America, is much higher than the standard of living in Afghanistan. We also have the worry about terrorists coming over from there, the cultural differences between them and us. It seems that our governments just pay no attention to the people that are already living in our countries. They don't seem to weigh up the risks against us by importing these very different peoples to us from over the other side of the world. And it seems that people are now starting to speak up about this. Peter Bone in the Houses of Parliament the other day pointed out that some of the people that were requesting help to get their Afghan relatives into Britain were actually Taliban themselves. And the article that I want to begin with today comes from conservativewoman.co.uk, which is a particularly good website. It also has a lot of information on COVID, but there's a good article there today which talks about Afghan refugees. Boris Johnson has announced that the UK will accept 20,000 Afghan refugees over the next 5 years. The EU is putting pressure on member states to do likewise, simultaneously asserting that deportations to Afghanistan for those who have been refused asylum should cease. And I'll just stop there and we will remind ourselves that the Taliban themselves have said that they are more than happy to accept back into Afghanistan Afghan criminals that have been caught breaking the law in Britain and in Europe. If we wish to deport foreign criminals, Afghanistan is happy to take them back. And yet what we have here is the EU putting pressure on countries within Europe not to send people back to Afghanistan who have been refused asylum, let alone people that have actually broken the law. Fair-minded, charitable people want to help. We have a long and proud history of doing so, and we like to believe that if we needed sanctuary from persecution or certain death, some other country would come to our aid. And this is very true, and this is something that I point out a lot. We, as white people, we do want to help the other races, but is it really helping them to import them into our countries? Surely the way to help them is to help them in the countries that they are in. And people that wish to leave Afghanistan would be much better off in the neighboring countries around Afghanistan, which has a similar culture and very close ethnicity to their own. Surely they're going to be much better off there than coming over the other side of the world where we speak an entirely different language. I mean, the British government have laid out a welcome package for these so-called Afghan refugees. And part of it is English language lessons, special training, grants to get into university, special help to get jobs, all sorts of things that they're going to need on top of just being given a roof over their heads and food. And if they were to be going to the countries next door to them, they wouldn't have these problems of trying to get a job, having to learn a different language, all of those sorts of things. So surely it would make a lot more sense to help out Tajikistan and Uzbekistan and help them to take in more refugees than to import them over into Britain. But the author here says, recent history has taught us that this kindness often extends only one way, and the resources for the arrival of large numbers are deducted from existing initiatives. One example from hundreds is the recent plea from Kent County Council that they cannot cope with the number of, quote, child migrants. If my own experience as a former social worker are anything to go by, I would bet everything I own that priority is now being given to these children over any other. And of course, I say child migrants within quotes because studies have found that 80% of these so-called child migrants are in actual fact not children. In Finland, they call them beard babies. We've even had some instances of 40-year-old Iranian men turning up in secondary schools alongside 14 and 15-year-old girls. And the students ended up having to stay home from school because they didn't want to be in a classroom with a 40-year-old man. So it's not just the fact that the resources are not going to our own children, our resources are being diverted to the children of other peoples, it's that these so-called children are not even children. Continuing, during my last few days in social work, I was approached by a boy of 14 who was known to us. He was fatherless and his mother was alcohol dependent and often cruel, abusive and neglectful. She had thrown the boy out of her house and he had nowhere to sleep that night. I telephoned every contact I had, only to be told that they only had funding for refugee children. Now, the origins of this are that if you have somebody in your country and they don't speak the language, they are going to be at far more of a disadvantage than somebody who does speak English. So this is the reasoning for this, why they prioritise these people. But that doesn't negate the fact that they wouldn't even be here if we hadn't imported them into the country. So it's not a fact that somebody who is already in the country then suddenly finds that they're facing bad times and they're homeless, so the social services prioritize them. They are prioritizing them before they're even brought into the country. We are importing this problem into our country. It's not like they are forcing it on us. We are doing this to ourselves. She says the same applied to adults when I was employed by the Salvation Army. Priority for social housing was given to single men from Africa and the Middle East, something Manchester City Council made no secret of. And again, this isn't because people from Africa are holding a gun to the heads of Manchester City Council. It's because Manchester City Council is prioritising these people over the indigenous people of Britain. She continues, "I am not a socialist, and I don't tend to boil matters down to pounds and pence, preferring instead to look at the human cost, the changing face of communities, the tensions that arise when one group comes to dominate based on intimidation and violence, the deteriorating aesthetics of a neighbourhood, often then considered to be a less desirable area than just a decade earlier. Then there are the issues nobody talks about for fear of being called a racist, that of crimes specifically against women and girls. Writing from Austria about the aftermath of Angela Merkel's open invitation to refugees in 2014 that saw exhausted refugees spilled out of trains and buses to be met by crowds bearing gifts of clothing and food and holding up placards that read, 'Welcome refugees,' one observer, Cheryl Bernard, noted, 'It was a honeymoon that could not last.'" And we are seeing similar things to that now with the Afghan refugees. We are seeing people getting together to welcome the Afghans into our country without apparently remembering what happened last time in Germany, that this sort of thing happened. "An unexpected development that was not tolerable," she wrote, "was the large and growing incidence of sexual assaults committed by refugees against local women." She pointed out that these were not of the cultural misunderstanding date rape sort, but were vicious, no preamble attacks on random girls and women, often committed by gangs or packs of young men. At first, the incidents were downplayed or hushed up. No one wanted to provide the right wing with fodder for nationalist agitation. And the hope was that these were isolated instances caused by a small problem group of outliers. But as the incidents increased, and because many of them took place in public, or because the public became involved either in stopping the attack or in aiding the victim afterwards, and because the courts began issuing sentences as the cases came to trial, the matter could no longer be swept under the carpet of political correctness. And the incidents she describes were not isolated just to Austria. Few will have forgotten the 2015 New Year's Eve mass sexual assault in Cologne. And this is really a symptom of the cultural differences that we have. People from Islamic countries are used to seeing women covered up, and if they see women that are not covered up, they assume that because the women are not covered up, it's because they are looking for a man. And when the women say, "We are not looking for a man," the men can say, "Well, why are you dressed like that? If you're not looking for a man, then you shouldn't be dressed like that. What's wrong with me?" And then they can get quite aggressive. And we see these horrible abuses that are taking place of these women. And it's based on these cultural differences. These people have a very, very different culture to us, and they're not used to seeing women that are not covered up, basically. And the only white women they may have seen, if they have seen any white women before, are ones in pornography. So, and they think that that's the way that white women are. And if the white women are not going to give them what they want, they think, "Well, what's wrong with me? Are you being racist? Are you being Islamophobic?" And it's just going to make the matter worse. And our governments know about the cultural differences. We've known about these cultural differences for hundreds of years, and yet they are still doing this. They are still doing this to us. They're still importing peoples that are incompatible with our own. And of course, it's not all of them, obviously. It's not all of them. What we're talking about here is group behavior, because there are some of them that behave like this. This going out in packs and abusing women is not something that we're used to happening in white nations, but it is something that happens in particularly Islamic nations. They even have a name for it. It's called Taharush, and it particularly manifested in Egypt during the Arab Spring. And there were European journalists, female European journalists, that went out to cover the Arab Spring. And they ended up being sexually abused by the protesters. And that was the first time that we really heard about this concept. And then with the wholesale importation of Muslim types into Germany and Austria. What followed on from that was these attacks in Cologne. And the fear is that a similar tragedy might occur with this wholesale importation of people from Afghanistan. We can see the way that the Taliban are with women. We're being told they want to keep them home. They don't want to let them go to school. All the images outside the beauty salons have been defaced. And that's the sort of people that we are importing over here. And I'm not making a value judgment on it, because they are a different people to us. They have a different culture and it works for them. That's their society, works like that. But it's not very compatible with our society, is it? And if our government were really putting the people of the country first, they would be bringing this point up. This would actually be coming up in the debate, and it's not coming up in the debate. You won't hear anybody putting this point across on the television. You won't hear anybody putting this point across in the government. All we're asking for really is a balanced look at these things. And if nobody's going to actually stand for the side of the indigenous British people, then it falls down to the indigenous British people to take that stance, and it falls down to people like us here at Radio Albion to point these issues out. And this website here, conservativewoman.co.uk. For Bernard, the wife of Afghan-born US diplomat Zalmay Khalizad, a puzzling footnote emerged. Most of the assaults, she reported, were being committed by refugees of one particular nationality, Afghans. So remember that. The person that is writing this is actually married to an Afghan-born US diplomat. It quickly became obvious that something was wrong, very wrong, with these young Afghan men. They were committing sex crimes to a much greater extent than other refugees. Even those from countries that were equally or more backward, just as Islamic and conservative, and arguably just as misogynist. It gives me no pleasure than it gave her to shine a spotlight on this, but as her detailed reportage of the series of appalling incidents and their official hushing up shows, this is something our authorities should be alerted to. The problem is that we won't know who any of these 20,000 newcomers will be, nor is there any chance of obtaining CRB checks for them all, and even if there was, would we trust it? What makes me increasingly angry and bewildered is this. Why is it that those who may pose a real threat to our safety appear to matter so much, while we and our lost and our needy don't appear to matter at all, even to the point where the conversation cannot even be had in any European country about the many salient points that Cheryl Bernard raises in her outstanding article. And that's talking about the possibility for increased crime that this brings. But you've also got the problem with housing. You know, we have a housing problem in Britain. People need houses, and they're talking about giving these houses to people that they've imported from Afghanistan, people that didn't want to defend their country against the Taliban. And if they didn't want to defend their country against the Taliban, they must have had a reason for not wanting to do that. And the reason is that they knew that they would then be able to come to Britain. They would have an excuse to come to Britain if they didn't fight back against the Taliban. That's how it seems to me anyway. And it does look as if problems are already starting to occur. A 29-year-old Afghan man in Germany attacked and severely injured a 58-year-old landscape gardener who was working in a park in Berlin, allegedly because he didn't like the fact that as a woman she was working, police said on Sunday. Now, they are saying that this man may have had mental problems, but there is a link here with Afghanistan, because we're being told that the Taliban in Afghanistan don't want the women working. They have told all the women that they have to stay at home. I mean, this may just be until they can secure the country and they can prevent attacks on women, and then they may allow them back to work. That is what they are saying. But years ago, when the Taliban were first in, they were totally against women working. And it seems as if this Afghan man in Germany, he had that same attitude. And when he saw this 58-year-old landscape gardener working, this woman working, he severely injured her with a knife. The attack in the city's Wilmersdorf district took place on Saturday afternoon, and a 66-year-old passerby who tried to come to the woman's rescue was also severely injured. Now, these two people that have been injured by this Afghan, if Angela Merkel had not imported all these people from Syria and Afghanistan, they would not be injured now. It's Angela Merkel and her government that are to blame for this injury. She imported the possibility of this happening where there was no possibility of it happening before. Police said the attacker, whose identity was not given in line with German privacy laws, allegedly approached the woman and talked to her. Then he suddenly pulled a knife and stabbed her several times in the neck. He also attacked the man who tried helping the woman, and the victim's identities were also not released. So there was no build-up to this. She couldn't have known that this is what was about to happen to her. The man just suddenly changed and started stabbing her. And he must have been carrying this knife with him. It must have been on his mind that he wanted to do something like this. Why else would you be carrying a knife with you that could be used for stabbing someone unless you had it in mind to be using the knife as a weapon instead of a tool? Berlin's General State Prosecutor's Office said on Sunday that the assailant was arrested on charges of attempted murder and aggravated assault. Police said in a statement the suspect may suffer from a mental illness. However, prosecutors and criminal police are also investigating him on suspicion that his attack may have been motivated by Islamist ideology. And they don't tell us how long this Afghan had actually been in Germany, whether he was somebody that has recently come to the country fleeing from the Taliban, or whether he's actually been there since 2014. But they do say that it could be linked to this Islamist ideology. And Afghanistan is a strongly Islamist country. I mean, even without the Taliban there, they are all 99.9% Muslim, and they will be following a strict version of Sharia law even without the Taliban there. I mean, the Saudi Arabia version of Sharia law is very different to the laws that we have in our countries. You know, there is always going to be this clash of cultures when you import large numbers of people from another culture into your own. And if you just have a few people, perhaps there's not likely to be such a problem then, is there? If you just have a small group of people from another part of the world, and they have their own little area in a town, there's not going to be enough numbers there for there to be a percentage of bad eggs amongst them. But when you import 20,000 people into a country, as Boris Johnson is proposing to do, there is a potential there for a percentage of them to be the sort of people that may attack women when they see them working, or may sexually abuse women when they see that they're not covered up. Now, we already have instances of people getting past the checks. When people were trying to get out of Afghanistan that were sort of hanging off the aeroplane, the reason why that airport was being mobbed by people is because the Americans have said that they will get anybody out of Afghanistan who wants to go, and they don't need a visa. So lots of Afghans just went to the airport. They didn't bring any documentation with them. And as we know, most of the fake refugees that come across over from France, they've all thrown their documents away. So we've got no way of actually telling who they are. And it seems those pictures that we saw of masses and masses of Afghans crowded into the hold of an aircraft, none of them had any documents. So how are the government going to tell whether these are people that are wanted criminals in Afghanistan and that's why they're fleeing? Because don't forget that the Taliban represent the forces of law and order there, and they want to go after the bandits and the terrorists, and they know who they are. So a sizable portion of the people that will be fleeing from the Taliban will be fleeing from them because they're criminals. Yes, there will also be people that are fleeing from them because they're homosexual or they're women that have been working. But the majority of the people that seem to be coming over are young males, the same as it was with the Syrian Exodus back in 2014. Now, in America, they have already flagged up some of these security risks, as they call them. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said on Friday that his department had flagged some Afghan evacuees as potential security risks and blocked them from reaching the US, and he vowed to make American safety the core of the airlift. Okay, well, he's found these ones that are security risks. How many managed to get through without being caught? That's the question. In his first briefing on the airlift, Mr. Mayorkas said those who reach the US will be resettled in the country. So if they can actually get past these checks, then they will be resettled. They won't be sent back. He said the United States has made a commitment and owes it to those who have helped the American effort or who face dangers from the Taliban takeover of their country. Well, why didn't they defend themselves against the Taliban when the Taliban took over the country? Why didn't they fight back? Well, it's because they knew if they didn't fight back, then they would be welcomed into America or welcomed into Britain. He confirmed that some evacuees were flagged as security risks and blocked, but he did not reveal what had happened to those people. So we don't know whether they actually came into America or not. I mean, they may well have just been flagged up as a security risk and they brought them into America and they said, well, we'll just watch them. We'll just observe. Similar to the same way that there was somebody on a watch list in New Zealand recently. He'd been in prison on terrorist charges and they had to let him out, and they knew that he was still a jihadi. So they said, well, we'll observe him. We will be close to him at all times. And yet they weren't close enough to prevent him from purchasing a knife and going on a stabbing rampage. I forget how many people he stabbed and how many people he killed. 6 or 7. And the police were there within 1 minute of him starting to go on this rampage because they were observing him. So even when you are observing these people, it's not going to be enough of an observation to prevent them from trying to kill people. The Washington Times reported last week that one Afghan with a rape conviction and previous deportation from the United States made it onto a flight and into the US. He was flagged by Customs and Border Protection officers at Washington Dulles International Airport and placed in a detention facility run by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And again, the question has to be asked, what's happened to him now? Has he been deported back to Afghanistan? Or has he just been let out into America? The European Union are saying, as I pointed out at the beginning of the podcast, the European Union are putting pressure on countries not to send people back to Afghanistan. So what is the option? What are our countries going to do when they find criminal types that are trying to get into our country and saying that they are fleeing the Taliban? They can't be sent back to them, so they will be allowed into the country and they'll just be put under observation and they'll go on a list as a security risk. So again, what we see is that our governments are putting the needs of these other peoples above the needs of our own. And they're not even doing that in a very good way, because as I pointed out, the best way to help these peoples would be to facilitate it for them to go to the countries nearby to Afghanistan. I mean, what they're basically doing is just setting up potential for friction and conflict. They're deliberately setting up division between peoples by importing them into countries with completely different cultures. I mean, it really does seem that our governments are just deliberately putting things in place to cause conflict. I mean, either that or it is incompetence, but can they really be that incompetent? Do they really not know that Afghanistan has a completely different culture to the culture over here? Do they really not know that criminal types will be able to make their way over here and that it's the people that are already living here that will suffer because of it? What about the resentment that the indigenous British people feel when they get looked over for a council house and they discover that the council houses have all been taken by Afghans? It's just a recipe for resentment and conflict and bad feeling, and it's all down to these government policies that refuse to actually put the interests of the indigenous Britons or the indigenous Europeans at the heart of their policies. Nobody's saying we shouldn't help these people, but we're saying that we should help them in a way that doesn't increase the risk to the people that already live in white countries. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.